All right, everyone. It's great to be here. It's always good to be in Vegas, and it's always good to see everybody. I didn't realize that we turned into a Shelvin. It's great, guys. That's tremendous. So let's try to go through what we're going to do over the next half hours. We're going to try to go through one part of this parsha and try to explain it as best as we can. And after we're going to say something about whatever, and we'll figure it out from there. So Perikop Hei Pasukov Gimel, this is parsha, parsha's Truma. It says the following: Asisa at Shulchan Atzei Shittim. You make for yourself a Shulchan Atzei Shittim. And it says, Amasayim Arkova, Amarachova, Amachetzi Komoso. It should be 2 amas long, 1 ama wide, and 1 and a half high. That's the height. Okay. V'nasata l'shulchan. It says in pasuk lamed. I'm skipping 5 psukim. It says v'nasata l'shulchan lechem panim l'fanai tamid. It's going to be lechem panim. It's going to be in front of the shulchan. It's going to be put on the shulchan. It's going to be there continuously. It's going to be there the entire time. Fine. We've got a lot of issues to talk about with this. What's the point of the shulchan? Why was the shulchan made? And we all know the parnasa board, and everybody realizes that this whole thing was made for parnasa. What does it mean? What does it refer to when we say that we have a shulchan that's made for parnasa? We're going to put lechem panim on, and then all of a sudden, everything is going to be given down to Klal Yisrael. What does that mean, and how does that apply to us nowadays? Aside from that, the question is, now that the Beis Mikdash is not around, is there any application that a person can use from the Shulchan that was in the Beis Mikdash and use that for ourselves? Is there something like that that you can use for yourself and try to take it on? So that's what we're going to try to discuss today and try to figure it out. The Chizkuni says the purpose of the Shulchan is very, very clear. It's a true honor for a king to invite all of his servants to a massive meal. It's anybody, any Rebbe that has a bunch of Talmidim want to invite them over for a perm suitor, to have them at his house, that's an honor. It's an honor to have everybody around, to have everybody sitting around the table, and to have everybody sit together and see what they have, to eat together. That honor, why would a king invite over his servants? The point is, he's saying, I want to give more to you. I want to be able to say things to you that I wouldn't be able to say at a normal time. Having everybody at a table, eating together, having a big meal together, that's already a schus, something that everybody can do together. And that's the concept of what the shulchan was. The shulchan is HaKadosh Baruch Hu inviting us to his meal, saying to us, let's have a meal together. Let's eat together. Let's do something. And by that, I guess those barriers are a little bit lowered. Everything is a little bit better. It becomes a little bit easier to be able to get with everyone. Now, Rashi says that it's more to it than just that. Rashi says in Pasuk Chaf Dalet, there's riches and greatness that come from the Shulchan. Riches and greatness, which is why it had a crown of gold on top and possibly 2 crowns that were on the Shulchan itself. You look at those little picture books. They got a crown on top and a crown right by the Mizgeret, right around. There were 2 crowns to be able to say it's like the table of the kings, a concept of the table of the kings. The Ramban says it's exactly so. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world in a way that everything was going to run through nature. What it could be, where you could look at the world and you could think that everything runs on its own, that God isn't involved, God doesn't do anything, and just everything runs the way that it's supposed to be, and that's the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to see it. As if to perceive it, as if HaKadosh Baruch Hu isn't there so that we can see God ourselves and bring God into the system. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu did it in a way where there are constant miracles, like man falling for us every day, the Be'er Shel Miriam appearing for us, the Anani HaKavod, that's a world in which you start taking for granted even the miracles of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where even Hashem's hand starts becoming just commonplace. It's not like that. We want it to be a natural, a normal world where everything happens in the right way, and in that sense, we look and everything comes out well, and all of a sudden we can see HaKadosh Baruch Hu's little hand in everything they do. I don't know if anybody remembers from last year, but my son had a hip disease, one of these unbelievable hip diseases, and it's called Perthes disease, calf Perthes disease. And thank God, everything's okay, but he got this disease in which the socket, the way that the hip fits into the socket and everything like that, it starts rubbing up against the bone. Happens only by active kids. They don't know why. It starts from the age of 6 all the way up until 12. And it's the most unbelievable thing because really the hip ends up healing itself. So if you wouldn't do anything whatsoever, everything would be perfectly fine. But in this case, the doctor has told us, we should do something because if we don't, he's probably going to have arthritis when he grows up and it's better for us to do something for him now. So thank God, everything was okay. We ended up going to this doctor. He did a surgery. When I came last year, which was November of last year, I missed the surgery. I was going in, and the surgery was at the only time that they could do it, because they found out about it, and then they immediately have to do it. They did it on that Thursday night, Friday morning, I should say, and I got there Friday morning right after the surgery was done, and I came in then. So I'm going to tell you a little story of what happened to me last year while I was here. So I got here, and I was speaking to a bunch of people, and I said, it's just a strange thing, just something that comes out of nowhere. It happens to 1 out of every 200,000 kids, so why did it happen? What does this come from? So speaking to 2 different Rosh Yeshiva, and one of them was Rabina. Does anybody know Rabina from Ziv Arya? Yeah? Okay, Rabina is the funniest, craziest person that you've ever met aside from Rabbi Lehrfeld, but he's an absolute, there's nothing like him. So I told it to him. I told him, I said, what do you think? So Rabina told me, he said, there's somebody you have to see. Okay, so I'm like, who? And he said, there's a Makobel. You have to go see him. I'm not going to say the name because he's telling me whatever, but he said you have to go see him. So I was like, all right, I'll go see him. This guy looked like a normal Sardi guy. You didn't see him as anything else. He just looked like a normal Sardi guy. And he walked inside, and I walked in, and I thought he was like a, I don't know, like he looked like a barber, you know? Like you walk in, he's like, hey, what's going on? You know, you didn't treat him like a real Mikovel. But he sat me down, and he said to me, he's like, so tell me. So I told it to him, in my best broken Hebrew that you can't have. Yesh leg. Yesh problem im ha leg. The calf and stuff. Right? I did it in the best possible way that I could possibly do it in. But I did it in like Sardi style, because you know, like you have to do it in Sardi style because that's how they do it, that's how they roll. So I legged, like, and something like that to make sure that they all knew that he knew what I was talking about. And we went in, I went in, and he told me, he looked at me without, he looked at the name, looked at this, and said, there's something wrong with your mezuzahs. Go home, go check your mezuzahs. There's two lamids that are messed up. One of them is by his room, and the other one is somewhere else in the house. Go fix those lamids and you'll be fine. So I was like, yeah. So really, what do? He said, you want it to be really good? Okay, so here's what you should do. You should take money, and you should put a little bit of money inside this little box. You should save it up until Sukkot, and then when Sukkot comes, you should go ahead and buy, with all of that money, a lulav and esrog. Buy a lulav and esrog for your son, and that lulav will be a schus for him to have, everything will be perfect, he'll be able to stand up straight, and everything's going to work out well for him. If you do that, everything will be fine. So I was like, okay, right, going to do that. I walked out, I was completely uninspired. So I called up somebody else that I know. I don't know if people know Rav Druk. You guys know Rav Druk? He's a Talmud of Rav Chaim Knievsky. He comes to Chicago once in a while. So I called him up, and I said, I had a whatever, and I told him the whole story again, and he told me, there's something wrong with your mezuzahs, and there's either one or two lamids that are messed up. Exact same thing, right? So I was like, is there anything else I could do? So he said, it has to do with the lulav. You should go check out, go make sure that he gets a lulav. I'm like, that's not Christian, what's going on here? Yeah, I don't get it. I have no idea what's going on here, right? So I called up my dad, and I was like, Dad, just take down my mezuzahs. I was still in Eretz Yisrael all the time. I'm like, take down my mezuzahs. Go get them checked, right? I'll tell the guy in Chicago that does it. I'll pay him later, right? I'll take care of it, right? I didn't realize how much it was. I would have told my dad to take care of it, or Ami. So either way, regardless, I'm like, just go do it, and afterward, just tell me what happened. So he calls me up. I was still in Eretz Yisrael. He calls me up, and he's like, I just want you to know, there are two mezuzahs that are puzzle. Right? And I think you should change them. I'm like, what was puzzle? He said, one of the lamids was broken, the other lamid, the top, was a little bit cut off from the other side. He said, one of them you can deal with, the other one is totally puzzle, you're going to have to change them both. So then I told him that story. I told him what happened to me, and I said, this is what Tumah Kavalim said. And he said, that's the most amazing thing, but this is what he said. He said, I have this happen to me almost every week. Somebody says something like that almost every week when it comes to something like this, and that's what ends up happening with stuff like this. So at the end of the day, right? Thank God. It worked. I mean, everything worked. We got the new mezuzahs in the house. We did collect all that. We went for the lulav and esrog, and he's fine now. He's in stage three of the four stages in which he really doesn't have any real issues anymore. The only issue is whether or not he's going to be able to go to Camp Simcha Special this year, because he had the best time flying in helicopters last year, and he really wants to go again, and that's the only issue that's there. See, it's so much of a crazy thing where if everybody would have these types of things where you just sit there and you just be like, mezuzahs are off, go check your mezuzah, everything's fine, then nobody would think of anything about it. But when you have these real things where everybody takes their legs for granted and all of a sudden something happens and then you go and fix something, well, that everything changes. That's the way it is. And that really the Shulchan is in that purpose, says the Ramban. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made it so that everything looks natural, as if everything is normal. That it's normal for a person to live. But that's crazy talk. Do you realize what your body is doing every single second of every day? How you chew food and how it goes down into your stomach? Even that stuff down there, and all of a sudden it becomes part of your entire body? And the stuff that you can't have, you exude out of your body? It's the most amazing thing in the world. It's a process that we never think about. Because if there was something supernatural that we thought about it, then all of a sudden everything would change. And that's the concept that the Ramban is saying. There's something completely different. And that's the purpose of the Shulchan. The Shulchan is there to be a shorish, a root, where everything comes down. There's brachos given down. I know, from us, it seems like bread, that's the most natural thing in the world. But think of a nation that saw mun come down every single day, that had mun land right in front of them, a little white pasty substance that you picked up and you ate, and all of a sudden it tastes like anything you wanted. Bread to them was abnormal. Bread to them was miraculous. What do you do with this stuff? Well, you see, you take the wheat, and then you crush it into a fine powder. Then after you take it in a fine powder, I'm going to add on some water. Okay, and if you're really spicy, I want to put some mold in there. I'm going to put a little bit of mold inside there. Now I'm going to stick it in an oven. Okay, and after, I'm going to put it on 400 degrees. I'm going to leave it there for 40 minutes. And once I take it out, right, it's going to be a beautiful, massive bread. the people that were in the midbar, the mon, you guys are like, yeah. For them, they sat there and looked at it and were like, this is crazy. This is crazy. Who in the world thought to crush it down into a powder, mix it in with water and mold, put it inside an oven and come out with this? It didn't make any sense. Who did it? Who was the first person to come up with bread? Who did it? You can understand somebody who ate a tomato for the first time and say like, okay, it's not good for anything else except for salad, but I hear it. Right, you can hear that. But somebody who makes bread, where did that come from? For Bnei Yisrael, this is the most miraculous thing in the world. So the lechem upon him was purposely made and put on top of there while they were eating the man. While they were eating man, they had matzah lechem upon him in which they would put it inside there, and that to them was the biggest miracle ever. They couldn't understand it. This is what happens when you put something inside. It doesn't make any sense to us. This is the concept, says the Ramban. It's a shorish, a root of how they would look at everything else in the world, and that all parnasa would start here and go elsewhere. That it would be, so to speak, as if the shefa comes straight down. If you could see it, you could see it. Sometimes you'll see it. I know there are movies in which you can see it, where you see the shefa coming down, but usually it's like an alien or something, and like they're doing something, there's like a big light that goes straight down. Almond base, not nitu. So they have books that you read that are from, it's about Reb Baruch Ber. And like he would shine lights down from the clouds and it would come down. Is that better? Right. So either way, so these lights would come down and it would be this huge, massive light. That's the concept. That's what the shulchan was. It was shefa coming straight down from Shemayim, straight to the shulchan, and then spreading throughout the entire world. Everything came from there, not the opposite, as if we took everything in and put it on the shulchan. It's a Kadosh Baruch Hu giving it to us through there. Kindness, chokim all days with the Chanin Mendoza. Chanin Mendoza, by far my favorite Tana of all time. If you can find a better Tana, you're a liar. It doesn't exist. Chanin Mendoza is the absolute best at everything he did. Chanin Mendoza was the one who the entire world was getting mazonos just for Chanin Mendoza. And he got, what did he get? A kav of cherubim, a kav of cherubs, a boxer every single week. And that's it. He survived off that, meaning he was the one who was bringing down the shefa. It came through him and then spread. But it was just a tiny little bit that went through him, and that's how it came out. Same thing with the lechem upon him, the same exact concept. Rabbeinu Bachaya says the word shulchan comes from the word sholeach, that he sends up us the bread. He gives us what we need. He's sending us whatever we need through the lechem upon him, and that's the whole concept of a shulchan, that anybody who has a shulchan in that way should be that you're giving out to everything else. I asked Rabbi Lerchel one time when the Rosh Hashiva, when it was Purim, and it was by him. And I'll tell you, honestly, I know some of you don't have that connection with the Rosh that you can possibly get. I pushed myself, and you should push yourself. You should try to push yourself on everybody you can. I don't know how I have a relationship with Rabina. I don't know how I have a relationship with most of the Rosh Yeshivas around here, but I push myself. I throw myself in there, and I throw myself into the fire, and I do it. I just do as much as I can. I stayed by him for Shabbos. I made sure that I was by him for Pesach, for a Pesach Seder. I was there for everything I could. So I went to him, a Purim once, and he said, he was in one of those moods, and he said, you can ask me anything you want. So I said, I know you learned in Yeshivat HaDorom, and I know that you were right near Netivot, which is where the Baba Sali was. I said, what did you see by the Baba Sali? So what did he answer me? He said, that's a question? So I was like, yeah. He's like, that's a stupid question. I said, but it's a question. So he said, all right. And he told me. He told me the whole story. I'm not going to go through the whole story. You know the guy that wasn't able to walk, that he got shot in the spine, said about 73 war, and he couldn't walk, he was paralyzed completely, and that guy got up. He was witness to that story. In the story, there were yeshiva bachrim that came to go to the Baba Sali. He was one of the bachrim. He wasn't a bachur, he was a brech at the time, but he went in to the place. But that's not what I wanted to go into. The Baba Sali had this thing, and Rabbi Lerfield said saw it all the time. We would wrap up the little bottle, right, put a little thing around it, just like this, right, and pour it to every single person in the room. Pour the arak, or whatever else he had, to every single person in the room. Now, normally, obviously, that's impossible. Obviously, you wouldn't see such a thing. But the concept of what the Baba Sali was doing is exactly this. That concept is exactly this idea of HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings it down and spreads it out to everybody to be able to give it to every single person as if it's just commonplace, as if it just becomes something normal. That's the shefa coming down and spreading out to everywhere else. Reb Hirsch has this in the most elegant fashion to be able to say something. You got to go to Reb Hirsch. Bread and the frankincense were the two things that you put on top of the shulchan. The bread represents, obviously, parnasa. Frankincense refers to a really good smell. These two things together, you put them both together, the good smell and the parnassa, the idea together, refers to growth, continuous development, feeling good about yourself and wanting to grow further and further and further. This is what the shulchan represented, and it's more than just parnassa. It was to become as if we're somebody who's constantly growing, which is why the shulchan was made of wood, because wood is something that grows, surrounded by gold. Gold gives it a firm foundation. Because you can grow all you want, but if you're growing in the wrong way, if you're growing in the wrong fashion, well, then everything goes bad. If a person thinks and sits there and says, I'm going to do it on my own, a doig ladomi or an Achitofel type of person, where I'm not going to listen to my Rebbeim, I'm not going to listen to my mentors, I'm going to do whatever I want to do, and I'm going to grow. I'm going to grow in that way. That is a messed up tree. That's one of those trees that get those gnarly branches and everything like that. The gold keeps it there. There's a base to where you are, says Rav Hirsch. It's that you know where you're coming from, and that's how you grow. And unfortunately, he says, that has to be applied to our business practices as well. That when a person wants to grow in his business, quite often people will take the easy route out, the easy way out, and to be able to say, well, I want to do this, and I'm going to get this. And so many people, and I'm sure it's not here, of course it's not here, right, have that attitude of, it's coming to me, I'm expecting it. I just had a guy say to me today, a guy texted me from my shul and said to me, I have a medical bill, and it's, you know, $4,000. So I was like, okay. So he wrote me back, he said, I need help collecting money for it. I was like, why don't you pay it off? And he said, what do you mean? You should collect it for me, and that way I'll pay it off. That's not the way we work. It's not the way we work. Now, I have to give this guy Musser, and it doesn't work over text. Over text, there's not like a Musser font where you can, you know, get it down. I can barely even get the sarcastic font down. Like, there's no way you can do that. But that's not the way we work. We don't work in such a way where all of a sudden it's like, I need something, so you guys pay for it. So you take it instead of me. That's like the easy way out. That means you're not working. That means there's no tircha involved. The whole point of the shulchan is that it's supposed to be wood, but gold. There should be something surrounding it, making sure that you're staying in place, that you know what you're doing, and that there's a concept of some type of growth that has a basis to it, the concept behind it. The Me'am Lo'ez says that there's so many things that you can do with your table to make it like the shulchan of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. For example, what can you do? So much. Divrei Torah is a way of making your table grow in a different fashion. Meaning, it doesn't have to be like the colloquial, hey, what is the parsha about? Not something like that. But using real Divrei Torah to have something that you have in your head that you were thinking about all week long. Some type of Gemara that you had a concept of that you were trying to figure out, and you somehow make it that you can explain it to a kid. And you can say to a kid or somebody at the Shabbos table, even your wife, I know they're lower than kids, but somebody, when you say to them, like, there was once an ox. What was the ox's name? It was Jimmy. And Jimmy the ox was walking down the street. And then all of a sudden, you're able to turn a Torah conversation. You're able to take your table and make it into something completely different. I'm not downing anybody that says Divrei Torah. Obviously, if you have a regular Divrei Torah, like a Chumash thing. But it shouldn't be about, okay, let's be Yod design so that we can bench. It shouldn't be that way. You should be able to go ahead and say that the whole table should be about this one concept. And you build it up, and you build it up. And you have everybody think about it. You have everybody consider. And then all of a sudden, you end with benching. You end with benching, and you're like, oh man, we got to finish the conversation now. Well, I guess we came to the sikum of the sugya, so now we're going to have to finish. That's the concept of what a shulchan should be all about. A shulchan should be all about the growth within the boundaries, says Me'am Lo'ez, of trying to make it all together. Obviously, Divrei Torah has its thing as well, but the Me'am Lo'ez says, anyone who speaks Divrei Torah at the table, a malach comes down, takes his words, and creates a shulchan out of it, and puts it in front of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and says, this is the shulchan that this guy made when he said Divrei Torah at the table. He was able to do something at the table when they were able to do it, when other people did whatever, they were able to do it. And that's exactly what the Gemara Megillah says about what happened on Purim. Well, Achashverosh's table versus the Jews' table. Anybody who's done the Gemara in Yud Aleph from the Beis and Yud Beis Med Aleph knows this is exactly what happened. That the Jews were sitting and saying Divrei Torah while the Goyim, what were they doing? And I don't mean to down every, I'm just saying Achashverosh and his guys, right? So for those who are PC, will be PC. So either way, but what were they doing? They were talking about Halu, the Medios are the most beautiful woman in the world. No, the Castios is the most beautiful woman in the world. No, Vashti is the most beautiful woman in the world. It's the most unbelievable thing. But that's what they talked about. That's what they went through. As a side note, time out. Why in the world did, I just wanted to imagine this. The king is sitting there. He's like, no, my wife is the most beautiful woman in the world. And what did they say? Does anybody know what the Gemara says right there? What did the officer say? Bring her in. Right. And bring her in. But she has to be naked. Would you say that to a king? Who said that? Is there some random guy that was just that drunk? Who was like, yeah, bring her in, but I don't want her in princely clothing. I want her naked. And the king is sitting there like, what? Get that guy, kill that guy. Why would he say that? That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard anyone say in front of me, ever. Why would anyone do that? So what does that mean? What is the Gemara trying to say? What does that mean by such a thing? The concept is, and the Chassam Sofer says, the Ben Ish Chai is a very similar board, but they both say the same idea. They weren't saying it. They wanted to do something that was so crazy. They looked over at Achashverosh and they were like, wait, if we actually have a beauty contest and we're going to have everybody together, then one of our wives might come in and Achashverosh is going to be like, that's a really beautiful woman. And all of a sudden, I'm dead, and she's part of his harem. So every single person there wanted to make sure that their wives wouldn't be invited. So what did they say? They said, well, obviously, Achashverosh, we can't judge this, because your wife is so beautiful because she's wearing all these queenly clothing, right? If she wasn't wearing any clothing, then we could actually judge them correctly. But for right now, we're going to have to admit that your wife is the most beautiful. To which Achashverosh said, then bring her in without clothes. And they were like, oh. But there were still these people, so they were like, okay. And they were fine with it. But the concept, the idea was right there. Okay, let's time in. So now here we go. The shach, there was another meaning that people have to always bring bread back before benching to make sure there's lechem tamid lefanai. That there's always lechem tamid. Because again, if your shulchan, if your table, your Shabbos table, your regular table is the table in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you should always have bread even at the time of benching so that the bracha of benching should be chal on the bread itself. As a side note, I know it's hard to remember that you're benching. Right, when you're eating in a regular weekday meal, it is difficult. If you have bread on your plate at all times and you have it right there in front of you, it is a constant reminder that you should bench before you leave. It's always good to have it on there just for that purpose. Because I know people get up, you got to go somewhere, and then whatever it is, and then benching starts losing by the wayside. Have that piece of bread right over there, and it's a concept to be able to bring it there so it's as if it's right there. Also, you should not have the challah knife on the table. You ever hear this before? You ever see this around? The challah knife shouldn't be on the table because the challah knife should not be used on the shulchan because these types of kalim were not used. They weren't made by using metal kalim. They used instead other things to be able to create them. I would assume diamond, right, in order to make them because they couldn't use metal because metal shortens one's life. So therefore, you should take the challah knife off the table and put the challah on the table. Those are the menhagim that you have over there. That's your time in hugging for today. That's in right over there. The shach says you should always invite Talmid HaChachamim over to your house, and if you don't have Talmid HaChachamim, then read about Talmid HaChachamim. Have a story or something about a Talmid HaChachamim that would be there so that you can say it over to your kids so that they know about everything. I had a minhag back when I was holy and I lived in Yaakov for like 2.5 months. So I sat there. I lived in 42-7, by the way. It was all the way down the hill, and it cost me $340, and I had 2 floors to my building, and there were cockroaches that lived in the bottom floor, and I never wanted to bother them. So I let them have their hotel, and I stayed upstairs the whole time, but it was absolutely awesome. But there was none of these buildings here. It was great, but my wife didn't like it because she was like, I know, Rabbi Levon, you live here now. Back then, it was Neyakov. Yeah. Now it's like Neyakov's. Then, you know, it's just like, it's just a different world. But either way, but the shach says that you should bring it down, and I used to do this. It wasn't the Zmanim app back then, right? But they had, like, I had, like, a whole book that had every gadol and when they died, at what date. And on that date, I would try to tell a story about that gadol. Sometimes I'd have to make up a story, because I knew nothing about the Rebbe, right? So I would just make up a story. Oh, the Rebbe, he drank a cup and he made a shahakel, right? So you say something. But either way, like, I tried to make sure that everything was there so that the people would understand, right? And that my kids would understand what it means to have that. And Shulchan says, according to the Shach, stands for Shel Chacham Nasan. That's what he wants to give. Instead, it should be something like that itself. Torah Shleimus says there are 8 psukim about the Shulchan altogether. And in those 8 psukim, 7 of them start with a vav, while 1 starts with a lamed. Altogether, that's 30, and 6 times 7. I know that's hard for you guys, because you've been in base for a while, but 42. 42 plus 30 is? 72? I didn't get an answer there. So. Okay, anyway. That's good, guys. So 72, for the Shem Ayin Beis. The Shem Ayin Beis is the 72 letters name of a Kaddish Baruch Hu, to tell you that if the Shulchan is treated correctly with Divrei Torah and Kiddusha, the Shekhinah rests upon it. That's where the Shekhinah comes down and it brings itself. As another side note, by the way, did you know that most of the Pesukim in the Torah start with a Vav? Did you know in Bereishis, in the very first parak, every single Pesuk starts with a Vav except for one? Which one?
First
one. Yeah, in Parak Aleph, Bereishis, for a look in. In the first parak, every single one starts with a Vav except for Bereishis. So I'd like you to ask, you can ask yourself, why is it that during the 6 days of creation, every single one started with a Vav, but the first one always started with a Bez? What's the concept behind that? Okay, it's not a hard answer. You can figure it all out. Okay, in Gematria, the Rabbeinu Ephraim says Shulchan is a Gematria 388, which is in Gematria as Misameach and Zesh Shalom, because when there's bread in the house, everyone's happy. Everyone becomes happy. There's no fights whatsoever. Peace and happiness lead to the greatest thing in the world, which is obviously Mashiach, which is why Shulchan is in Gematria as LeMashiach, because it leads to Mashiach. When there's such peace and there's such things happening in the house, everything works out well. However, On the other hand, if you start using it for the wrong way, then shulchan in the same gematria, it's actually the same letters as linachash. It gets given over to the sultan, bad things happen, and that's when terrible things are over there. That's the concept of use for tuma itself. Now, the Rabbeinu Ephraim, the Shach says this, the Rabbeinu Ephraim says this, but it's so obvious, and it's so easy to be able to mess this up. Food stems from, or causes you, to have a bigger yitzhahara. There are things that happen when a person eats food in the improper way, and what ends up happening when a person doesn't treat his food correctly. If you eat like a pig, feed like a pig, then you're never going to be able to defeat your yitzhahara. There's a concept where there's two eyes. The Maharal talks about this in Sfaras Yisrael. Two eyes, two nostrils, two ears. There's one mouth, and it connects with the mouth down there. That when a person is a monster when it comes to eating, he's a monster when it comes to his titles. And that's what happens to a person as well. I remember, it's so funny, because I just went to somebody here in Ve'akov that I used to eat by, and they asked me if I can still eat three or four pizzas in a meal. And I'm just like, no. And now you're making me feel bad about what I'm about to speak about. Because I was a big eater. I was one of those guys who could eat like 13 chickens and not have any problem with it whatsoever. Now I'm fat. But back then, right, I don't know. I had that metabolism, you know, the lovely metabolism that everybody brags about and, you know, just means you're in the bathroom a lot more often. It just happened. So I don't know. It's just one of those things where if you eat too much, it causes you to have that yitzhahara that becomes a little bit stronger. The Hasidim say, and this is brought down by the Sefer Toras Chaim Emunah, that every food is filled with sparks of Kedusha. If you eat it correctly, then the sparks of Kedusha go within you and make you Kaddish. And if you eat it incorrectly, then they take within you and they scream at you from the inside. And that screaming on the inside, so to speak, makes you into a little bit more tummy, and that ends up being a terrible thing for you. And that's the reason why the Shulchan's in the north. Torah Shlomo says, brings down a medrash. The reason why the Shulchan was put in the north is because Sifoni. The Yetzirah is known as Sifoni. That's one of the names according to Sukkot and Beis Mabez. And in that way, we learn, right, that that's the reason why we have to knock it down, so to speak. It's one of the reasons why we put our tefillin on our left arm. Anybody who's a righty, put your tefillin on your left arm. The left is considered the north. That's the idea of what the smol is referring to. And for that reason, we end up trying to make sure the yitzhahara is, so to speak, knocked down. There's another Yalkut Ravani over here. I'm going to make you guys look it up. The Sforno says that the Aron Kodesh itself represents, that's the seat of the Shekhinah. We now go into the other Kalim. We're going to the menorah and the shulchan right after the Aron Kodesh that the king would have, like a table and a candelabra. That idea shows chashivas and greatness. So we have them there. There are two jobs that a king has to do for his nation. Number one, run them properly and judge them in the way that they need to be run. And number two, to be able to make sure, protect them from enemies outside and make sure those enemies never get in. That's never going to happen. Each one of these crowns that the shulchan has represents one of those things. That it's supposed to be, number one, protecting us. So to speak, that's the crown that he's going to take care of us. That's the misgeres. The idea of the misgeres being soger and not letting other people in. And then on top of the shulchan itself, to be able to take care of us that we'll have everything that we could possibly do. There's a kliak over here. I don't know if we need to go into it entirely over here. But the concept is this. Yaakov Inu's mida was yesh li kol. That he said, the idea of Tiferes, of Emes and Torah, that the ability to say, I have everything, I don't need anything more. Esav is Yeshli Rav, Achi. But Yaakov is Yeshli Kol. I have absolutely everything, I don't need anything else when it comes to that. Obviously, the idea behind anybody being happy is Yistavkes B'mot. Whatever you have, be happy with. Granted, do I want more? Of course I want more. If you're not striving for more, you're dead. There's no reason to be in this world if you're not striving for more. But whatever you have and whatever you've got in front of you, that should be what you're happy about. Of course, I am ecstatic that I'm able to do X, Y, and Z. Do I want to do more? Of course I want to do more. Do I want to have an awesome yeshiva with 150 people in it, all shaying and learning, while also doing what they need to do? 100%. But that's not what I have right now. So I'm happy with what I have. Do I want more? Of course I want more. That's why I'm here. But that idea, the concept of what Yaakov Inu is there for, is exactly this, says the Kliyakar. It's Yesh Li Kol. I had a friend whose family was not going to help him whatsoever. He came from a poor family, but he was committed. And this is a guy who came from Neveh originally. You know, Neveh before they turned into, I don't even know where they are now, but Neveh when it was still drug rehab school. So he ended up going to Neveh, came here afterward after like 2 years. This guy was unbelievable. I can't say his name because I didn't ask him permission, but absolutely unbelievable. He ended up getting married a couple years later, maybe, I don't know, he's in the mirror already, so maybe like 3 or 4 years later, and I knew he had absolutely nothing. He married a Gioris, this girl also had absolutely nothing. Right now, I just didn't understand, how is it working? How is it going by you? Like, how are they able to make it? So finally, I got the gall. I ended up going up to him. And myself, like, it wasn't like I was rolling in the dough in Kolo. For some reason, they don't pay you often. That 700 shekel goes a long way, I know. But, like, you know, what are you going to do with it? You get, like, 50 shekel for making kaburas and, like, getting tests and whatever. Like, I don't know. It just didn't work. Most of that went to Coke on Shabbos when I had these guys over. So it didn't really work so well. So I asked him, like, how are you making it? How are you doing? Like, what's going on? How are you able to make it like this? And he told me the craziest thing. He said he went to his rav. I'm not suggesting this for anybody, because seriously, this will only work by the biggest fools and the greatest tzaddikim. And this guy, I promise you, was one of the greatest tzaddikim I've ever met. That I can tell you. But anybody else who does this is probably the biggest fool I've ever met. He said, he was told by his rav, this is a psak, given by his rav, craziest psak I've ever heard. And I would never give this psak, so don't come up to me and expect me to say it. He went up to him and he said, I want you to go and put all of your money inside a bank account. Okay? Never look at the balance. Keep putting it, whatever money in, only take the money that you need out. You will never have a problem. So I was like, right, sitting there with the mezuzahs, right? Not going to happen. Absolutely not going to happen. He survived for 5 years like that. 5 years. There was no way that he had enough money. I don't know how he paid his rent. I have absolutely no idea. Absolutely no concept. So maybe, eventually the bank went up to him and said, you owe us $500,000. Right? That is a possibility. I have absolutely no idea. Like, after 5 years, that would be the most likely. But this guy, I said to him, I'm like, how are you not able to spend an extra? He said, what do you need a present for? I'm like, I don't know, your wife? He's like, my wife understands what we're doing. Again, I am not saying that people should do this. I have no idea where this guy is now. Again, probably in jail for tax evasion. But I have absolutely no idea. But the concept, the idea, I get it. I was once, I know that nobody here knows Rav Edelman. I think, Rav Edelman, do you remember Rav Edelman? Rav Edelman was there. Rav Edelman was a mashkiach here in Yeshiva. I remember I came back home. We were both at a wedding somewhere, and he was going to drive me back home. So I think I was in Kolo at the time, and he was driving this car, and him and his wife were standing in front of the car, and they were having a conversation. So I, like a good backseat driver, like a guy in the backseat, was not listening to the conversation, but I heard every word. It's just amazing how that works, right? Because, you know, I'm curious. So either way, so they were talking, and she was so proud of herself, she had saved 10,000 shekel over the last 6 months from Sukkot until Pesach, to be able to spend that 10,000 shekel on their kids' clothing and like everything they needed for Pesach, and they were going to have awesome stuff, they were going to build it up, and she was so proud of herself. And he said, oh, Rabbi Edelman said, oh, that's great. I'm like in the back. I'm like, that's awesome. Yeah, that's really good. He's like, stop talking. I'm like, totally, got it. Your conversation, not mine. I'm just looking out the window and listening to you at the same time. This is my good ear. So either way, regardless, they went on, right? And he said, but then I went to my Israeli neighbor. I went to my Israeli neighbor and I said to her, right, this is what I did. I saved 10,000 shekel. You know what she said to me? She said to me, why do you do that? You should have borrowed 10,000 shekel from a gemach and then saved up the 10,000 shekel to pay back the gemach at the end of the day. She's like, why would I do that? That's crazy. Like, what if I don't get the 10,000 shekel? So this is what the Israeli neighbor said. Listen to this. Conceptually, right? She said, if you save 10,000 shekel and then you spend it over Pesach, you did it. You saved 10,000 shekel. You were the one who made all that money and you spent the money because it's your money to spend. If you borrow 10,000 shekel and then you pay it back, every single bit of money that you didn't expect that came into your hands in some miraculous way where you didn't, and all of a sudden something happened, is a miracle. It's a miracle. HaKadosh Baruch Hu did something for me. Then it already becomes where you see the amunah, your amunah and bitachon taking place right there in front of your eyes, and you're amazed by it. She said, that's what you should have done. You should have seen that the money coming in was miraculous rather than think that it's all your own money. So I'm sitting in the back there, and I'm like, I still don't get it. But I hear it. I hear it. I could never do that. Why? Because I'm a Russia gummer with a little bit of tzidkus because I learned under great Rabbam. But I'm a Russia gummer. And I think of that story and I'm just like, but I have a savings account. Thank God. Right? I still have a savings account. I still have that ability to just in case, right? Just in case that's there. But I hear the concept. Don't use a savings account. Put it, and I remember somebody said this to me immediately after I got married, and I was like, what are you, crazy? Because again, I'm a Russia gummer and I had great Rabbam. But he said, you should take all of the money that you made at your wedding and you should put it into a gemach. And that way, while instead of gaining the $10 that you're making out of the bank, right, you'll be able to make schar and shemayim. I'm just like, no. No. I'm keeping the money. I'm hoarding it. I'm eventually going to be Scrooge McDuck, and I'm going to jump inside it and swim in my money. That's what I want to do. That's my plan. My plan, I have a very, very definite plan of what I want to do. But I get it. I get the concept. I get the concept of where my emunah and bitachon should be, and I get that it's not there. And I want it to be there. It's just not there. This is Darsh David over here. This is a Pirkei Rabbi Elazar over here. The concept of the 1.5 amos going up. You notice, it's 1.5 amos going up. Because when it comes to your ruchnius, you never want to stop. You always want to see yourself as if you're half full. Not half empty. That's a Russia again, right? That's me. You want it to be half full and you're looking at it. It's like, oh, I can always get something more. I can build myself up. I can do even more than that. That's the idea. And push yourself even further in order to get there. It's Pirkei Rabbi Elazar in the first part that talks about this as well. And the Darsh David as well. But we don't have any time. Rabbeinu Bachaya brings down Yecheskel. Mem Aleph Chav Beis. Park Aleph Mem Aleph Chav Beis. Where it says, the Mizbeach 8 shlosh amos. The Mizbeach was an 8. Was made of wood. It was 3 amos tall. Yadabrei Lai. Zeh Shulchan. Asher Lifnei Hashem. And he said to me, and he sent me a message, and he said, this is the table that's in front of Hashem. What does that mean? Mizbeach, Shulchan. Why does it switch from Mizbeach to Shulchan? So the Gemara says, and the Gemara tells us in Brachos Ninhem of Days, the reason why it starts off with Mizbeach and it ends off the Shulchan is because nowadays, even though we don't have a Mizbeach to bring Korbanos to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, our Korbanos come from our tables. The food that we eat and everything we do, our kaparos come from our shulchan itself. There was a minhag of the Hasidim in France. I've never seen this minhag done. You need somebody who really knows their stuff when it comes to this. The Hasidim in France, what they would do is that when someone would die, they would break down his dining room table, chop it up, and use that wood to make his coffin. Why? Because that table that he used for chesed, that he allowed Aniyim to come to it, we would give away all that food, that table is the perfect table, the perfect place to be able to put in everything that you need, to put this person down into the ground. That he would go in with that chesed that he did at his table, and to be able to go through there. That's the concept. And it could be, this is the concept, because I'll say in Brachos, Hamarech al Shulchano, somebody who spends a long time in this Shulchan, Marichan lo Yom HaMushnosov. You'll spend days and many more years and many more days in your life. Now come on. Well, you have to have an 8-course meal, and then all of a sudden you're going to have a long life? That's not true. You're going to be in the bathroom for a long life. There's no way you're going to have a long life just by having a long table. The shot is, if you're marich on your table, that means there's more opportunities to feed more people. More poor people are going to come. More people are going to come into your house. There's going to be so many people there. If you spend more time at your table, you'll be able to be there when other people come back. One of my biggest, I don't want to say, it's an issue when it comes to it, is that mishulachim that come in America, and I know there's not many, it's not mishulachim here. Here's just the change guys. You know what I'm talking about? Guys are just walking around like that all day long. I'm pretty sure they have a constant twitch. It's very possible, right? But in America, you get these mishulachim, they come to your house. I don't spend that much time at home. And when I'm spending time at home, I've got a lot of homework with a lot of my kids. It's very difficult for me to be able to have mishulachim over and to actually treat them with respect and to bring them in. So we have our deal where we always have like our apple or banana and our water that we give to every mishulach that comes in. And I always, you know, any check that I can afford, you know, the $10,000 that, you know, that I can afford, right? But then you put it down, right? You have everything there. But it's so much better to be able to say to them, and I've said this to them before, have you had a meal? Now, I don't really don't trust my kashrus because I'm an OU Nick and they're bedots. Right, I get that. I totally understand that. I'm totally trade for coin to them. But to invite someone to come inside your house and eat at your house, to have a meal by you, that's the ikker. That's really what it's all about. That's what you're supposed to do. It's a joke on Pesach. You know what the joke is? We get up there, kol dichfin yeseh ve'yechol, get out. That's what we really say to them. If somebody would come up to your house, where you have this long hair, he'd be like that guy who, you know, like he's for sure a heroin addict. He's got that long nail, right? And he's sitting there and he's coming to your house, he's knocking on your door, and you're saying, anybody who's hungry, come and eat. I'm hungry. Get out. No, not you. Everybody else. Anyone else who's normal and probably has another meal to go to and doesn't have to go to me can eat at my house. That's who I want eating at my house. But anybody else who does not belong in my house doesn't go there. You know, they say the greatest thing of Ruchaim was obviously a gaon when it came to his lamdas. But he was a gaon in his chesed. They say he was a greater gaon in his chesed than he was to anything else. I forgot who it was. I don't remember which son of Reb Chaim it was, but I'm pretty sure that it was the Beis Halevi. I just don't remember. No, it would have been the Griz. I'm sorry. It was the Griz. That the Griz said that he never, whenever he went to bed, he never found himself in his bed in the morning. That his father would lift him up out of the bed, put somebody else down on top of there, somebody who was poor who needed a bed, and he would be sitting on like a chair somewhere, right? And he'd be around there. Amazing. Right? That's Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim one time brought a person in and gave him a haircut at the table. The Griz said that he saw lice coming from the guy's hair and jumping all around the table. How many people here would go anywhere near a person with lice? How many people? How would do that? Reb Chaim is giving him a haircut, calming him down, letting him be at the table. I get freaked out when people don't take showers after a day. I can't stand it. When you go coast to coast, I want to punch people in the face. I just can't do it. I can't. That's who it is. I can't do it. And Reb Chaim is sitting there and giving a haircut to anybody who comes inside. It's like a level of chesed that we don't even understand. We have no concept of what this is all about. Says the Rabbeinu Bachaya, Marach HaShulchano, Marich Lo Yom HaMushnosav. Everything gets a little bit easier when it comes to that. Now, there are four things that we can do at our table, and I already mentioned something in the Mamloys before that allows us. Number one, assure the kashrus of what you're eating. I don't know what to do on Eretz Yisrael. This place is really messed up when it comes to kashrus. I honestly don't know what to tell you. You can eat pedatz, you can't eat pedatz. You can't eat mahadran, you can eat mahadran. I don't even know. I have absolutely no idea. Why is the Rabbanut kosher if they're not kosher? What do they do? They just like rub pig on it. I have absolutely no idea what. I have no clue. I get it that there's kulas and komras. I get it, but what? There's no clarity. I just don't get it. I have absolutely no idea. I know there's a whole big thing in the Knesset right now. You guys don't because you don't read news. But that, for me, right? I know. I get it. But I have absolutely no idea. I have absolutely no concept. But at least to be able to assure whatever kashrus you hold of and whatever your rabbeim tell you to do here, whatever you have in America, whatever kashrus you hold of, to make sure that everything that you have is properly eaten and truthfully, it really should be healthy. Also, I know. I'm definitely a hypocrite when it comes to that. I don't think I've eaten anything healthy since 1978. I was born in 79, so I don't know if I can honestly tell you that. But it should be that way. My wife tries. She tricks me. You know what she does? She tells me that it's a carrot muffin and it's an asparagus muffin. Asparagus tastes like death. So I know when it's an asparagus muffin. All I need to do is be able to put one little bite inside my mouth, and I know this is death, and my wife is trying to kill me. So I immediately spit it out, and I say, No one eat this! It's horrible food! It's absolutely horrible. But I get it. I get the concept. I get why people should have, like, light pizza instead of eating the four slices of pizza that they have there, right? Or have, like, the fat pizza, or, like, the really, really thick slices. People say, you know what? I'm just going to have one slice, and I'm just going to combine them and make it one big piece. One of my favorite. I forgot what it was. It's like a Simpsons from years ago. I mean, we're talking like 90s Simpsons, which is like the best Simpsons ever, and everything else stinks, right? But it was that. It was where they all went on a diet. They didn't have any money or anything. So Homer took out he was told that he could eat a rice cake, but he could have any topping he wants. So what did he do? Obviously, he filled the rice cake with just one little rice cake and everything on top of it. That's Homer. Do you want to be like that? Do you want to be a fat, bald guy who's on a cartoon? No, obviously not, right? That's not what you want to do. Nobody wants to be that way. Or maybe, like, I don't know, others. But nobody wants to. That's not where we are. So that's number one. Number two, eating with derech eretz, the way you would if you were on a date with a girl. Now, if you don't know what that's like, then don't be dating right now. You should not be dating. If you're the guy who sits there and it's like a marathon, right? You're just like, no, go on. You probably shouldn't be dating right now. I'm just suggesting. I know, because I deal with shidduchim all day long with all my guys, and I know they are the funniest people in the world. Here's one thing that you should know. Never order whiskey on a date. Don't, when you're driving. Why? Why? Why would anybody do that? Never order a beer. Never order a beer. You know why? Because you know what a beer says about you? I don't care about you. It just means I'm going to order what I want at any point, and I'm not even thinking of you. And I know, people are going to say, well, don't order a Coke, because it means you're not healthy. Coke is God. So go ahead, you can have Coke. I'm perfectly fine with Coke. But I'm saying, when you sit on a date, it should be obvious. I know it's not, because I see what people do. But it should be obvious. You use a fork and a knife. No fingers. This is not 1990. Right? You don't go ahead. You don't eat with your fingers. You take it around. You don't order barbecue wings until you're engaged. That's when you barbecue wings in front of your kawa, and that's when you say, this is who I am. It's done now. There's nothing you can do about it. You have everything dripping down. That's when you do it. But never, ever eat that. But this happens all the time. You eat like you would on a normal date, the way you would. Eat a wing with a fork and knife. Right, fork and knife, and put it down there, and sit around and mash it around a little barbecue sauce, and pick it up and eat it and put it inside your mouth. That's the way it should be. That's the way it is. I know wings night is not the best night inside my house. It's not. It's not always the easiest. When you have wing night, that we have usually like a pile of napkins because you know you eat like a pig. And I'm married. I've been married for 17 years. I'm good with this already. There's nothing my wife can do. What are you gonna do? You're going to make me more asparagus? Yeah. I'm not going to eat it. I'll be perfectly fine with that. But that's number two. Number three, make the brachos slowly and properly, and remember to make that bracha at the very, very end. I know that's obvious. It's obvious, right? But making the bracha slowly and properly, it's not like you sit there and you're like, you took a bite and you're like, and it was a mizono. So like, that's obvious. Like, don't do that. That's not where you are. That's not what you're supposed to be. You're supposed to be able to sit there and know, what bracha am I making? Am I making this bracha? Am I not? What kind of bracha can I make? Am I making a bracha on dessert? What am I supposed to do with dessert? Make those brachas properly, and then at the very end, you have whatever bracha corner it is, and you concentrate, and you sit there, and you say, this is what I want. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, thank you for the food. Now bring me to the next level. That's the concept where you want to bring yourself into. And number four, try your hardest to steer the conversations away from Dvarim B'Tehillim and Lashon Hara. I know, sports is probably the greatest Yetzer Hara out there. It's absolutely unbelievable. It was almost impossible. I'm telling you, it was almost impossible. When the Cubs made the World Series this past year, I don't know if you guys know. You know that? They made the World Series? They won? Yeah, and you know that? So I want to tell you, it's a timeout, okay? I always told all of my community, I said it for years, that Mashiach is going to come when the Cubs are in Game 7 of the World Series in the ninth inning with a lead. With a lead. I always said it, and I told it to people. So when the Cubs were in Game 7 of the World Series in the ninth inning, right, they didn't have the lead at this point because the Russia gave up runs, so I'm not worried about that. He's on the Yankees now. He's fine. So, but yeah, whatever. But at that point, somebody called me up and said, what's going on? Where's Mashiach? Where's Mashiach? And then I think he called me in the 10th inning. He said, where's Mashiach? Where's Mashiach? And I'm like, not now. Not now. Why now? I was waiting. I did. But can I tell you a really cool story? That I'm the reason why the Cubs won the World Series? You guys all know that? You want to hear a really cool story? So I have a roommate that was here years ago. I don't think Revolution knows. I don't think you know him either. Ellie Hershkowitz. It's this guy. He was in New York. So I gave in. It was after Night Seder. I had finished all my work earlier. I asked my wife if during dinner if I could do all my work so that I didn't have to whatever. And after 10:30 p.m., I decided, you know what? I'm going to watch the end of the Cubs game. I'm going to watch the end of it. I said, it's the end of Game 7. I've never seen anything. I'm going to do it. I'm going to go do it. So I went over to my brother's house, somebody else who has a TV, right? And I said, I went over and I said, all right, let's all sit down. A couple brothers were there, right? If anybody knows my brothers, we're all sitting around, right? And I come inside. This is what happened. I come inside the house. And Aroldis Chapman gives up a home run, or a run, I don't know, whatever he did, right? And then I sit there for another couple minutes, he gives up two runs. So 6-3 lead ends up becoming 6-6, right? So everybody's all upset. Then the Cubs go up and they're like swinging and I don't know what they're doing, right? Hacking at nothing, right? And all of a sudden it's like going around and then they come up and we were like, so immediately my friend calls me from New York. He's like, are you watching the game? And I said, yeah. He's like, stop watching. So I'm like, what do you mean? This is like an awesome game. He's like, I'm telling you, they're only losing right now because of you. So I'm like, that's not true. They're losing because of all of Chicago. Because we deserve this, and this is what happens to us. He's like, no, I'm telling you, go learn. So I'm like, all right. Then the rain delay started. And I'm like, all right, I'll go learn. I'm not going to sit here sitting in a rain delay. Like, I'm not going to do that. So I went home, and I started to learn. Then my brother Rafi, okay, sends me a text message, right? As I'm sitting there, I'm sitting in a learning. I got my stuff out, right? And he sends me a text message. His text message says, Cubs just scored two runs. So I'm like, unbelievable, right? So I'm like, okay, this is awesome. I'm going to turn it on. So I have a computer, and I figured, like, something has to work on here. So I turn on the computer, and I turn on this one little thing, and everything goes on. It was on Fox or whatever it is, right? Fox.com or whatever. So I did it, and I got it on there. I don't know how, maybe that's my filter, but it did. Thank God. So either way, so I turned it on. As it went through, all of a sudden, the Cubs give up a run. Literally, as I'm watching, they get a run. The Indians got a run. And I'm sitting there like, So I turned it off, right? And then the Cubs won. So it was 100% all me. You heard it from me. It was 100% all me. I told this to Joe Madden. He didn't believe me, but I'm telling you, I believe it's all me. Let's end, okay? Let's end with this. Our idea, this concept of what we can do, and that fourth one of trying to keep yourself to saying not to Tomorrow McDonald, not getting involved in sports, and instead speaking about things that are a little bit more cautious, something that's around there. We're going to end with is like this. The Ksav Sofer says that the best medicine, and Maimar Chazal that goes through in brothels, is to eat bread with salt. And that rids yourself of any sicknesses you might have. Even if you have the means and the ability to do anything you can, to eat anything you want, bread and salt is by far the best thing that a person can eat. Says the Ksav Sofer, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi was a tremendously wealthy person. Obviously, he had all these riches, possibly from Antoninus and from other things that he did. But he was extremely wealthy. And he said, he lifted up his fingers to Shemayim and he said, I never benefited from anything, from any of the food that I had, from Ksuvis and Kuf Gimel and Vase and Kuf Dalam and Aleph, never benefited from anything with any of my little fingers. I have it, everything goes over there. It means it's impossible to live your life without taiva. Obviously. You got to live with taiva. Taiva is with you. It's with you every single day of your life. You're not going to be like Libi Chalal B'Kirbi with David HaMelech and saying that I have no Yitzhahar and then I'm going to survive. We're not like that. It's not going to be what it's going to be like. We're not like David HaMelech. But it's to be able to know and control and understand what your taivas are. To be able to say to yourself, this is what they are. This is what I'm weak in. This is what I have to work on. If a person knows that, you'll be good. Because, yeah, you're going to give in once in a while. There's going to be times where you're going to have this, you're going to have that, and whatever. But you're working on it. You know what you have. The best thing that a person can do to himself, and this is really from Revolbi, and it comes from the whole system of Revolbi. It's to understand who you are and what you represent. What are you? What do you have? What do you do? What do you do that's good, and what do you do that's bad? Accentuate the good, and don't worry about the bad. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. If it happens, it happens. And then you get yourself further. Move yourself around that and try to make yourself better the next time. And make sure that it doesn't get it. If one time you have an extra little whatever, then the next time you don't have as much. It's the best way to be able to control anything without realizing who yourself are. If you're dealing with this, if you're doing this all the time, you'll be able to understand what your Yetzirah is. And this is the concept of the Shulchan. 12 Lechem Apanim. 12. Obviously representing all the Shvatim HaKlal Yisrael. To limit yourself, you have to have taiva food, even though the mum, the spiritual food, is right there in front of you. The taiva food is in front of you, but limit it. Keep it limited. Only keep it to what it is right there, and don't make it go any further than that. That's the concept of the Shulchan. So to be able to go through again, what we explained over here is we went through the Chizkuni, we then went through Rashi itself, the Rabbeinu Bachaya, the idea of Sholeach, of sending it over to us, Reb Hirsch explaining it in a different fashion. The Vian Lois with his little Minhagim, we spoke about the Rabbeinu Ephraim, the Shach, with the Torah Shlema, with the Gematrias and going through. The Sforno, understand what it is, we really quickly went through the Kliyakar and tried to explain what he was trying to tell you. After that, we went through the Rabbeinu Bachaya again in Yecheskel, trying to understand the difference between a Mizbeach and a Shulchan and why it's written that way. We went through the four different things that you could do from the Yalkum Mamarim that explained what a person could do at his table. I didn't go through Shalom Shrabi or the Al-Shech or the Torah Chaim Yamuna or the Chida, because I didn't have enough time. And the, what else do we have over here? The Talmud Das from Rav Sternbach or the Od Yosef Chai. That's your fault. That's that. And then the Ksav Sofer that explains at the end what you're supposed to do, how a person is supposed to handle his tithes. So very quickly, I'm here on business from Skokie Yeshiva. I'm here to be able to, you know, to speak to guys about anything they want when it comes to yeshiva itself. I realize that most guys here are going to come back. If you're first year, come back second year. If you're second year, come back third year. If you're third year and fourth year, right, it's very difficult. You want to be in yeshiva, and it's difficult to come back. We feel we have a yeshiva that has grown over the years and understood where we are, what we are when it comes to the yeshiva, and what it is when it comes to the college itself. We have a college on campus which allows people to be able to get degrees and make it in a fashion that will be pretty quick, and you'll be able to get down what you need to do in order to get out into the business world, as well as, truthfully, to get you back to Eretz Yisrael, because I send back, I visited 17 of old Talmidim and base matters that we had in the base matters that are now in Eretz Yisrael, that are living in Eretz Yisrael. Granted, 5 of them went to the army, not my problem, but regardless, 17 of them all together. I met with 10 of them so far, and I still have a couple that I'm supposed to meet tomorrow. It's really what we want is what the person can do. We want you to be able to grow as a person. We want a person to be there. If this is something that you're looking for, we want you. We do very well with base guys. If anybody remembers Elio Lopin from last year, Elio Lopin is by us. He's an amazing kid. He does great things. He's sitting and learning the base matters, and he's getting his degree, getting whatever he needs right in the afternoon in order to make sure that he has a Parnassa. If that's what you're looking for, if you're looking for something like that, we're for you. That's what we're here for, and we're there. And my last thing, I have an email that I send out on Thursday nights. It's an email that is not a Dvar Torah, because nobody reads Dvar Torahs and you hate them. And the reason why you hate them is because they're too long and they're boring and they're stupid. So this is what I do. I don't send out that. I send out one thing that I learned about during the week, something that I got during the week, and I say like something on it. It is never longer than a paragraph. Usually it's not longer than 3 sentences. And I do that on purpose because I don't think that I can, if I can't say it in 3 sentences, why is Twitter created? I think Twitter was created for that reason, right? Don't worry, I'm not on Twitter. But that's the idea of what this email is. If you want to sign up for it, you just have to give me your email, and you can put it right over here. You can sign out whenever you want, but it is what it is. But if anybody wants that, that's right over there. It keeps you in touch with me. If anybody needs anything, that's the easiest way to get a hold of me through email. They don't pick up my phone, and I don't like people. So that is the easiest way to go through. Otherwise, thank you so much, everybody. Have a great year, and learn sharp. Yeah. 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 Yeah.